Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years, signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see $100,000, $600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you're finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. Is who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor driven, the radio is sponsorship driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me. Show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and he was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
4 years ago, we started a microgreen farm. We started growing microgreens at home in our living room. And today we got to the point where we maxed out a room of 300 square meters. So today I'm gonna give you a little tour of the room. And I'm also gonna give you some really good tips for if you want to grow microgreens at home or you want to make it into a business. I'm gonna give you those tips in the end of the video. As you can see here, we're growing a variety of different kinds of microgreens. We basically turn this into a business where we are delivering microgreens like this in trays, still alive, for over 1,000 restaurant companies and catering, cafes, everything in Denmark. So we learned a lot on this journey about how to grow the product really nice so it looks fresh and it's the shelf life is really high in this product. And basically we grew from growing in our living room to growing in a basement to growing in a 10 square meter little room to 100 square meters, and now today we are operating in our own building where we have 300 square meters. In the back we are growing mushrooms, as you saw in some of the other videos, and we really turned this into a way of living for us. We are employing around 30 people here in Denmark, with expanding into Czech Republic. Hopefully soon we're gonna expand into other countries as well. So this is like a really fun business to operate because we are in the process of communicating a lot with chefs. We're communicating with other gardeners, and it's like a product that's alive, so it's really difficult to maintain the freshness if we don't sell it in the right way and if we don't sell it in the right time. If we sell it a little too late, then maybe the customers don't like that the product gets too big and the quality diminishes. So if we sell it a little too early, then the product hasn't fully grown out and some people think it's a waste of money. So we really have to maintain a quality that like looks good and fresh all the time, and basically that's one of the hardest thing about doing a microgreen business, because that's what they don't tell you. It's really difficult to sell the product if you don't know how, and it's really difficult to maintain a stable quality. So yeah, we came around all those things and it worked out really great, and now we are doing 25 different varieties of microgreens. So I'm gonna take you a little tour around the room and you can see what we are doing. So you can see here the peas, they are really nice and fresh. We are growing these in different sizes. We're growing them really tall, or we're growing them like this tiny petite peas. They are really, really great. The smaller peas, they are much more fresh in flavor and texture, but the bigger piece, they just give a lot of spread on the plate. So the chefs who wants to use big peas, they want a lot of produce on the table. So yeah, some people like them tall, some people like them small. So this is, for example, our lentils. You can see here, they are really nice and fresh. We can grow them under strong light or we can grow them under less strong light. We found that some species work really well under less strong light, and under strong light we need to grow other species. So the way that the light is, that if you are using white light, for example, then the taste of the product is much more sweet. If you are using a violet light, it's a bit more sour. The violet light is more intense, it's more efficient in energy consumption. However, it's not so nice working under violet light. We have a lot of young people working here and we don't want them to use like special LED glasses when they're working in here. We just want a really nice clean work environment that doesn't give you a headache or gives you a bad like sense of seeing, because you get all green in your eyes after working in a violet light for just 10 minutes. So it's really bad for your eyes because of the UV. it's so intense in the violet. The white is a bit more easy to work in. You don't need goggles. You can see here we're using the white light with red spectrum, a little bit of yellow in it, and a small amount of blue. We're using the Paris LEDs, so Paris Europe, we can highly recommend. It's the most efficient LED light for microgreens that we've been working with. We've worked with many, many LED producers like Samsung. We worked with Kind, with Spectrum King, with Fluence as well. And we found that Paris is really, really the best light for herbs, salads, and microgreens. So shout out to Sandro from Netherlands. Thank you for some high quality lighting. We really enjoy working with this, and we are growing really nice product within this light. We're moving a little ahead. So as you can see here, for example, we have some sunflower, nice sunflower growing here. Basically, almost all the shells are falling off by themselves. And we are in this room right now, turning around, I think, with the mushrooms in the back and the aeroponic system over there that I'm gonna show you in a minute. I think we're turning around $20,000 every week right now. So we've expanded a lot since the last video we made, and you can check it out right here if you want to view that. It's really interesting working with all these. It's a live product. It has to be sold within 2 weeks maximum, because if the product gets a little too high, for example, we can see the peas here, they are like reached a point where they are about as high as they can be, because after around 5 days more of growth of this, then it's getting really difficult to store it on cool, because you have a much reduced shelf life in it, and it's not good for business growing the product too much. So you want to grow it as high as this maximum, and then deliver it so you can make a new crop on the same space. Basically, all the space we have here is like around 2 to 3 weeks, and then it gets rotated, so we get new crops all the time. You can see here we have some garlic that's been growing, and it's really fresh. Give it one more week maximum, and then you can't sell it. So you have to all the time make sure that you're doing it in a way that makes the product not bad, but as fresh as possible all the time. This is the aeroponic system that we are operating. This is a system produced by Next Food in Denmark. It's operating only basil and parsley right now. We tested some lemon basil. You can also see that in another video. In the back, we have Hjalmar. He is also one of the partners. Maybe you saw him in another video, but he is watering right now. So in all the microgreens we're growing, we're still watering everything by hand. And some people may think that that's insane, but since we have so much, we are spending like 1.5 hours every day watering, but we just figured that it gives us the best product possible, and we don't want to go on any compromises on the quality. So until we found the right watering solution for the way that we are growing microgreens, we are gonna water it by hand. The aeroponic system that we have here, it's really nice, it's automated. We only put the plugs in, and then 3 weeks later, we have these fully grown basil and parsley herbs. We change the water in the tank, and then we give it fertilizer. We measure the pH value and make sure that the plants have everything they need. The lights is gonna be changed to Paris LED as well. So this system, it uses 2,500 watts. So 2.5 kilowatts per hour. With Paris LED, we're gonna reduce that to around 1,000 or 1,500, so 1.5 kilowatts per hour maximum, I think. Hjalmar, he's watering right now. He's watering all the special herbs that we have. We are growing some shiso, some marigold, some basil, and yeah, basically some really different exotic herbs that you can get on your normal greenhouse. This is Tobias. He is working with us, and he's been working with us here for some time. He is one of the young people as well, helping us with everything we need. And in the back, behind the camera, is Rasmus. He is also one of our young people. He is actually cutting all the videos that we are doing, and he's doing a really good job. We are just trying to make everything work here as efficient as possible with the space that we have. And sometimes it's a challenge, but yeah, we are working very close with the chefs and with the other restaurants and the wholesalers, so we know all the time what people want and what they like. Alex, he is not here at the moment, but he's gonna be part of another future video for sure. He is the director, the CEO of the company, and he's also one of the creators of microgreens here in Denmark. Regarding the watering in the whole production here, we started testing these drippers. So we have a water tank, an irrigation tank in the back, and with connected with a computer and a pump. And then this is watering 2 times per day. Then underneath the trays, we have a big tray to collect the water and make sure that everything is watered from the bottom. And we are just still testing this. We tried testing it on the peas as well, where we had drippers everywhere, and that didn't work out so good. So we also started testing this system here, and it's a sprinkler system, and maybe I can show you how it works. We are also testing this system. This is a sprinkler system. We don't know if it works yet, but we are testing it, so I'm gonna show you how this. So it's basically like just putting the water everywhere and sprinkling the water all over the trays. We don't know if we can make it work so that it like reaches everything and all the trays at once and doesn't water too much in the middle. That's one of our issues right now. So we want to see if we can make it work. And if not, then we are gonna see if we can work with some other kind of way to do the automatic watering. But so far, we are hand watering everything and making sure that the product is the highest quality that it can be, because that's what we want to deliver. We don't want to compromise anything or work with bad products. We believe in what we do, and we believe in that a system like this can be set up so you can grow locally herbs, microgreens, salads, mushrooms, and deliver them to your local restaurant, your local canteen, cafeteria, whatever, and maybe provide more fresh food for the local environment in your area. So as promised, I'm gonna give you a few tips on how you can become a profitable microgreen grower. So the first tip is basically that you should not see this as a way of like making money from day one. It takes a lot of time to get the product right, to get the communication right. But once you have the product right and the communication with the chefs, then it's a really nice business to work in. So the second tip is to just provide great service all the time. Provide the best service in your area. Make sure that your product is more fresh, much more beautiful looking, because that's going to give you an edge over the competition. And the third lesson I'm going to give you today is that you want to grow this locally. So if no one is growing anything like this in your area locally, then you have an edge, because people want to get more local food and they want to supply and provide with people who want to work with products like this locally when it's grown the closest to the plate as possible. Thank you for watching the video. I hope that you got some knowledge out of it. I hope you got some ideas about how you can start a microgreen business, or like what not to do now. And yeah, basically, if you have any ideas for future videos, let me know in the comment section and something you would.
Construction. It's about 40% complete. Alright, so this is the...
Okay, we've been having a little technical difficulties around here this morning. After effects of the two hurricanes that passed through this state. And we'll probably carry on today's topic, which we might get to, but anyway, we'll cover it over tomorrow. E-commerce villages are the new solar, e-commerce villages are the new mill villages, but let's see, we had to do a special thing here with Darlene Lewis of Little Rock, Arkansas. Good morning, Darlene.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you clear. For the people who don't know who you are, share with us who you are and what you do before we get to what you need.
Okay, my name is, as you said, Darlene Lewis. I run a nonprofit agency called Lewis Burnett Employment Finders. We specialize in working with individuals who have a felony background. We help them to help themselves, basically to help them get a job, a house, to get their family back together. I go to court with them, whatever is needed for them to complete themselves after coming out of prison. But the key thing is we work on is getting them employment so they can take care of themselves. My agency has been around for 38 years. It is a nonprofit. We don't charge the clients anything because they cannot pay. They're just getting out of prison. They have no jobs. They have no income. And a lot of them have no families and nowhere to go. So we work strictly on contributions and donations. We are a nonprofit 501c3 agency. So that's basically who we are and what we do.
All right. Now, tell us how everything got started 38 years ago.
Well, 38 years ago, my son went to prison. So I started the agency by working with individuals who was, young men that needed help and getting back on their feet. So I started it working with them. The agency started as a means to help young people get a better education, to get them some employment, to help them, to keep them out of prison. That's basically what we were trying to do. But some of them slipped through the cracks and ended back up in prison, so I started working with them on their way out of prison. Then I continued to help them. It started, at the living room of my home. I didn't have an office space or anything like that. We worked out of my living room. And I was president of a PTA, so I worked at the PTA office as well. Then I started seeing more and more people. It was like word of mouth. There was no actual advertisement or anything like that. It was just plainly word of mouth. And then we went from a few people to thousands in a short period of time. And I've been doing that ever since then. That was back in 1987 when we got started. We have many articles that individuals can go and read to tell them about us and what we do. We place, in 2014, I placed 2,000 people on full-time permanent jobs, and they remain on their job for over a year. That's when we were not able to go any further than that year. And right now we're still doing the same thing, but in a bigger. It's much more bigger now.
Now, about how many people come through daily?
We see about 15.
Or is there contact you know, needing your services?
Yesterday, I saw 15 people that walked in my office. 15.
Oh, okay.
No, it runs between 15 and 20 people a day.
All right. So now, in 38 years, I guess now you've been written up, and some people have done, because I think I found you on the internet, some YouTube channel. They haven't done any advertising. What? So where are you now? You guys need a little help now. So for people that would like to donate, how can they get in contact with you?
Well, if someone is interested in helping us, and we would be greatly appreciative that they did, they can contact me at my cell phone number, which is 501-413-2126, or they can call the office phone, which is 406-7994, area code 501. Can touch bases with either one of those numbers.
All right. Now, I guess any amount that they have available, they can, donate?
Any amount. It does not matter. You know, if you have Cash App, I can give you a Cash App number. If you have time, you can send the money.
Yeah, give out the Cash App number. Give that out as well. They can call and all that. But give that out as well. Any way you can get it.
Okay, my Cash App is going to be $ Darlene, Darlene, a capital L, 67. That's my Cash App.
Okay,
so
repeat that one more.
I'm going to repeat that again. It's $ Darlene, Darlene, a capital L, 67. Did you get that? I think I lost you. I don't know if you can hear me or not, but I can't hear you on this end. I hear you now.
Hello, hello.
Yes. Can you hear me at all?
Oh, wait a minute. You hear me or the music?
I hear you.
I can hear you. You know what? Wait a minute. You hear any music? All right, hold on. Let me refresh my, because I've got I got connection problems over here. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, but. My screen just went blank. I've had Wi-Fi problems over here this morning.
So I can understand.
I'm seeing if I... All right, yeah, I got more than usual because my whole screen went blank. So I can't even... Okay, wait.
Are you still there?
Okay, I got booted out. Let's see if I can find my way back to the studio here. And it's buffering. I don't know if anybody can hear me. We have connect problems this morning. And this isn't Blog Talk's issue. It's happening on my end. Okay. I can't hear Pete. Okay, darling, you're still there. Let me open your mic, if it'll allow me. Okay, let's.
Okay,
darling, can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay.
All right, yeah, we got Wi-Fi problems over here. The wire got cut or something. All right, you know what? Get that Cash App and your contact information again.
My contact information is area code 501-413-2126. The office number is area code 501-406-7994. And the Cash App number is $ Darlene, D-A-R-L-E-N-E, capital L, 6-7.
Okay. And the name of your business again? For the new people that don't know about you.
Excuse me?
The name of the business, because for people, I know the name of it, but for people that are not familiar.
Okay. Lewis-Burnett Employment Finders. It's Lewis-Burnett Employment Finders. That's how you can look us up online, type that in, or my name, and information will show up. Can you still hear me? Because I can't hear you at all. Come on. I'm still holding on, if you can hear me. I'm still holding on.
Okay, boy, we've had some challenging times this morning. We got Wi-Fi connection problems on this and the while cutting down some tree limbs, the Wi-Fi wire got cut. So we might have to put a call into the company to come out and replace it. Okay, and Darlene is. Well, hopefully some of you guys caught that. I'm going to keep the show going. Maybe we can bring her back. Let's see what we have here.
How are you maximizing the gift that God put on the inside of you?
I knew that if God ordered the meal, he was responsible for the bill. And I felt like he was going to pay for it.
If he gave you the vision, he'll provide the provision.
I had $5 left in this plan, and I hadn't even fed my family of 8. And that day, I took that 5 and turned it into 60. I took that 60, put the 5 back that I started with, and turned that into 600 by the end of the week. And that is the same money that I've been flipping for 17 years. I did it with no debt. I did it with no knowledge of the business. I did it with no experience. And for all the people who got something to say about it, I did it with no credit too. So when they say, ain't no way, there was more to the story than that.
Yeah.
Now, before we hop into today's show, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Now let's jump into the video.
Mignon, you, I didn't know this about your story, and I've known you for years now. And if I am correct, you were a teen mom. When did you have your first?
I had my first baby in 1993, and I had just graduated from high school.
Okay.
But I graduated from high school a year early. So I had gone to college early. Nobody prepared me for what the party was going to be like on an HBCU campus.
Oh, man.
So second semester, I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee.
Are you serious? What HBCU did you go to?
I went to Xavier University.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And the shocking thing to me, and this is why I love your story, because every time we do something like this, right, something powerful comes from it, and I learn something brand new from you. And you had five kids before 25?
Yeah, I had five kids at 21.
21?
Yeah, by the time I was 21, I had five children. Three of them were a wedding present.
Okay.
And then two of them I had given birth to, and I had my sixth one at 27.
27?
Yeah.
And didn't drop out of college?
No, it just took me a little bit longer. I even took my children to school with me.
What?
Sometimes they were in class. My baby Dylan, who now runs the business, would sit in the back of my Bible class. He would never be silent. He would never sit still. But when I needed him to go to class, it's like something happened to him, and he would just color until the class was over. Man. Like, God, shut that baby's mouth so I could graduate.
Man, and today, we won't tell the people how old you are. You still look like you're about 30 years old, you know what I'm saying? But today you're running a multi-million-dollar cupcake business. And I don't even think it's a cupcake business. I think that you're running a multi-million-dollar ministry, because when people experience you and your cupcakes and your team, your staff, it's just a different experience, right? And I want to talk about that, because some people are experiencing you for the first time here on my show.
Mm-hmm.
And when people experience you, what do they get? I know what I get. I get a deeper side of you. But when people experience you for the first time, what will they get? I'm curious.
I'm hoping that they get joy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's my mission in life. I want to leave everyone experiencing Mignon Francois with joy.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is such a big value for joy in heaven, because in the Bible it says those who sow in tears will reap in joy. And when you think about sowing and planting, it takes time for a harvest to grow. And I just think that when that harvest is joy coming out of the things you've gone through, it just lets you know that everything that's happening to you is happening for you.
Yeah.
It's something that you can plant, and something is going to grow out of it. And I believe that's what my whole experience is about.
Yeah. So you wrote a book.
I wrote a book.
And this book, I was emotional when I read it. This is not the book. I want it to be fresh. I actually read a PDF version that your team sent over. And it's called Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. And inside of this book, you talk a lot about choosing life. And really, if you just follow you, you're always promoting choose life.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean exactly, choose life?
That's such a good question. I was being awakened at 3:17 every morning, and it was like clockwork. Like, you ever saw that movie Groundhog's Day? I would turn over and see the clock. It would say 3:17. I would just...
Okay, seems like we got... Hopefully, well, let's talk about... We're going to get our guest back on, Darlene Loomis, in a moment. The woman that you heard speaking on a recording, her name is Mignon Francois, and she's a black woman originally from New Orleans, Louisiana. Now, her story, because they didn't tell it on that particular audio, But I'll just quickly tell it now, because then we'll segue him back into Darlene Lewis. Mignon is a mother of seven children. At the time, before she started her business, which was not planned, she was married. So one day, somebody knocks on her door, and it was a real estate agent that was, you know, working, selling houses in the neighborhood. So the real estate agent asked Mignon, "Why are your lights off? I mean, well, no, why is it dark out? I mean, in there." And she said, "Well, I'm meditating." So she said, "All right, well, look, this is why I came over. You know those cupcakes that you occasionally bake and pass among people in the neighborhood? Look, I got an open house this afternoon. So if you would bake cupcakes, I will pay you for my open house. I'll pay you $1 for each cupcake." All right. And she said, "All right." And Mignon says, "Fine." Now, the real estate agent didn't give a deposit or anything like that. And all Mignon had in her pocket was $5. That's it. And that was going to be used, because sometimes she didn't feed her family until 10 o'clock at night. So she must have gone next door, because the lights were cut off, which means she had no electricity, and the water was cut off. And on top of that, they were facing foreclosure. Real estate agent didn't know that, though. So anyway, she must have went next door or walked somewhere, and she said, "Look, could you take me to the dollar store, grocery store, whatever?" She took that $5, the only $5 that she had, and she went and bought the supplies, must have used somebody's kitchen to bake the cupcakes. Cupcakes were ready. She called the real estate agent and said, "Cupcakes are ready." Real estate agent comes over, and Mignon has baked 60 cupcakes. So he got paid $60 in cash, took $5 out to feed her family for that night. And you know what, let's take another $5 out for whoever drove her around to get the supplies or whatever. So now we're down to 50, you know. She's got a $50 profit. By the end of the week, she had turned that $60 into, actually $50, into $600. Long story short, she was able to get the electricity cut back on, the water cut back on, and made enough money by just making cupcakes and reselling them, until she was able to get the house out of foreclosure, which means she had to be several months behind, 6-12 months behind, but she was making that kind of money. Now, the name of her business is called the Cupcake Collection. All right? The Cupcake Collection. And if you go to the website, cupcakecollection.com, the house that you see is the house that was in foreclosure. Now that house is paid off. And they've opened up an additional location in Nashville, Tennessee. So she took her grandmother's cupcake recipe. That's what she had. She had $5 and her grandmother's recipe to make cupcakes and turned it into millions. Once again, the lights were cut off when she started. The water was cut off when she started. And the house was about to be foreclosed on. And all she had was $5 and a cupcake. But what she did have is faith. So before we go back to our guest today, Darlene Lewis, let's review Steve Harvey on Faith Street. Because at one time or another, we're all going to have to walk on Faith Street.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And Master Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to.
Okay, all right. We're back with all these Wi-Fi. Anyway, we're back. So we had to walk on Faith Street with these technical Wi-Fi issues this morning. Anyway, so we're back with Darlene Lewis. So, Darlene, you're on Faith Street, and you've been walking by faith, not by sight, for 38 years.
That is
out there. So what do you say?
I said that's correct. That's the only way I know to go is to step out on faith.
Right. So people that are, if you're just tuning in or been hanging with us through the because, man, it looked like I was surprised we were still connected. Well, I had to call in three or four times myself to this morning because of the Wi-Fi issues, but they seem to be okay for now. So Darlene, for people that haven't heard you, tell us the name of your business, where you're located, and how they can contact you and or send money, donations, because I've known Darlene before the pandemic, and I don't know, 7, 8 years, something like that. But she's a legit. Yeah, how many?
It's been 8 years.
Oh, 8 years. All right, we've known each other 8 years. All right, and the podcast is 10 years old, almost 11. So over half the time of the podcast. So, Darlene, for people to contact you directly or people, well, matter of fact, before we give that information, this organization, because she doesn't advertise, she has people through word of mouth that have been coming to her that are out of prison. And, you know, they got offices they need to keep the lights on and all that. So, Darlene,
tell us a little more. Well, for the people, let's pretend, let's just start from scratch because we don't know what happened with this morning with all this tech. Tell us, you know, what you need for your office, and then how can people donate money today?
Okay. All right. My name is Darlene Lewis, and the agency's name is Lewis Burnett Employment Finders. We've been in existence for 38 years now, and we've always stepped out on faith because that's the only way we know. God has always kept the lights on, and we've always been able to pay the rent, and we don't have government grants or anything like that. We basically work by individuals who believe in what we're doing and is willing to give us a donation. Now, right now, we've started this office back up, and I'm short some stuff that I need. I need computers because individuals coming out of prison, they need some classes to know how to fill out applications, and maybe we do resume writing and all that. So we need computers, we need desks, we need paper, supplies, and most of all, we need monetary donations to pay the bills around here. Right, the bills are coming out of our pocket as we speak. We pay daily everything on our own. But right now, we are reaching out to people to ask them if they would help us help others. Now, this agency helps people with the felony background gain employment, get their GED, do their community service, anger management classes, drug alcohol classes. We do the 12-step program. We help them. We do parenting classes. Whatever is needed for you to complete your life, that's what we're trying to help you do at no cost to the client. They don't have the money, so they can't go out and pay whatever it's going to cost them in there to take those classes. And parole and probation and judges, they say, I need you in parent classes. I need you to take anger management classes. I need you to take this class. But these classes cost money. So we created the classes here at Lewis Burnett, and we help them to get through the classes with a certificate that's honored by the court system here and by the court, by the parole and probation officers, where they can take their classes and get back on par without having to come out or try to go and come up with that kind of money, because they still have fines and fees that they have to pay, and they still have a family they have to take care of. So our thing here is we offer them a hand up, not a hand out. We want to help them get on their feet so they can take care of themselves. So we are asking anyone that can help us with a small donation, nothing, you know, whatever you can afford, whether it's 5, 10, 20, 25 or more, we're looking for help to continue to do what we do. I'm not financially able to do it like I did back in 87 or back in 2000, so we happen to reach out to individuals to ask for that assistance. LA has been a great person that I've known, and he's always been able to stir me in some type of direction where I can continue to do what I do. Now,
Darlene, I'm assuming that some come out with skills, but then maybe quite a few that don't come out with skills. I'm gonna name a couple of things, somebody that knows how to make sandwiches. I imagine some people don't come out. They don't have skills to get employed. Like if somebody could be trained, if they're willing to be, make sandwiches. Because then they can go get a job at Subway or McDonald's or something like that. Or somebody that might want to learn how to become a carpenter or a home builder. Do you have anything set up like that?
Yes, we do. We try and help them, like I say, whatever way we can. There's very few people that comes out that we can send to McDonald's and stuff like that because they come out ready-made families with so many fines and fees, and they won't make enough money to take care of that. So
we try and get them in classes where they can get their forklift license, where they can get some skills, where they can be they can help in construction, where they can learn, you know, put them in truck driving school, because you know it doesn't take long to get CDLs.
Right.
You know, any whatever is needed to help them get where they need to go. That's what we focus on.
What if there was a trade school set up specifically for returning citizens, where they can learn carpentry, home building, or even sandwich making?
That would be a wonderful thing. That would be a wonderful thing because we have so many people that are out there that is in need of some help like that, where they could learn how to build their own home, where they could learn how to,
right.
you know, to, like you say, make sandwiches, where they could learn how to, you know, drive forklifts and do all that. That would be a wonderful thing. It really would be a wonderful thing. But there's not
okay.
any out
well,
there that the fees are so
I'm
high.
A volunteer for that one.
The fees are
I'm a
so
volunteer
high.
To help set that
Can
up.
I get in? Yeah, now that would be great. That would be great. Like I said, last week, we saw about 23 people. This week, I saw 15 in one day. Because when you have one, he tells somebody else, and that brings
exactly.
a bunch. So one guy we've already placed, and he's told all his friends. So now, yesterday, I had 15 people walk through my door. 12 o'clock. So it's so many. That's how we become overwhelmed with the homeless and people's having a place to live.
Oh, you know what? Well, now hold it. Now you done brought up a hot topic. You know, because we got a housing crisis globally. What percentage of would you say the people that are coming out are? They let them out of prison, and then you know they might have to do a little time at the halfway house, depending on you know charge or whatever. So, how many would you say have a problem with housing, housing, and or might be homeless?
Over half, because believe it or not, when they put people out of prison, like they got a big kick out coming up in the next month. Most of these people have no family; they have nowhere to go. All of them can't get in halfway house. Only federal. They got to go through the halfway house.
Right.
But if it's not a federal crime, they're just going to be paroled out. If they don't have a parole plan, they're going to sit their time. But most of them already sit their time. So they're ready to, it's time for them to be booted out. So where do they go? To the streets.
Man, that's
to
rough.
The streets. And it's very
that's
rough.
That's real rough. And then if they get, and then if they, get hungry or commit a crime because they don't have the skill set or whatever, then they get arrested. You know what? This was happened in Washington, D.C. a number of years ago. I was just sitting there, it was about 1 or 2 o'clock when I was waiting on a bus. They leave out. This is like I say, 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning. Was it in the morning? Or 10 o'clock at night. It was at night, put it up. So it was a cold night in D.C. So there was this guy that he wasn't drunk or nothing, but the police officer, you know, asked him to leave. They just wanted people in the bus station who had a ticket and waiting on the next bus. So I was had my ticket just waiting on the next bus. That's why I was there. So this guy didn't have a ticket. It was a real cold night. So essentially the dude was trying to keep warm. So the police officer, who was nice and professional, asked the guy to leave, and then the dude started loud talking to the police officer, and then the police officer gave this guy at least 5 breaks, at least 5. And oh, so you know, that was the end of that. So he didn't pull a gun out on him or nothing like that, but he wrestled him to the ground, and I just looked at the whole thing and said, this dude is trying to come in. He's trying to get into the cold. Well, not cold. He's trying to get in to a jail cell where it'll be warm, and the way the system runs,
you know, being slow. You know, he'll have at least 3 days with three hots and a cot and some warm weather. I mean, some warm heating and, you know, clean water in the shower, hot water and all that. I mean, to me, it was obvious. That's the only reason why he was doing that to the police officer and whatnot. But I imagine there's a lot of people like that.
A lot, because after they get so many doors closed in their face, after they get broke down by the parole or probation officer, they're ready to give up and just go back. That's why recidivism is so high, because they have nowhere to go. And the average company will not hire an individual that has a felony background. They won't.
Right.
Because they're going to look at the fact they got to bond them and they got to go through all this different stuff just to get them hired. They won't hire them. Then they're having to pay the service they're coming from.
Right.
So,
and then now due to some Supreme Court ruling, like in California and here and where I'm not in Texas, I'm in Florida. Some of these cities have basically banned, they've criminalized, you can't sleep on a park bench in some places now, in California, at least Florida. You know, I don't know how it is in Arkansas yet.
In Arkansas.
Is that like that there now?
It's pretty much like that everywhere, but I know it's like that here in Arkansas. A lot of places, they see them on the benches, they don't go in and tell them they can't be there, or they're going to give them a hard time, and persons are going to resist because they'd rather go to jail.
Okay.
They'd rather go
to jail. Well, Darlene, we're going to have to give you information out one more time, but yeah, I'll be in touch with you this week because I'm a volunteer. We get that set up where we set up some type of vocational training. So if a person, you know, teach them how to make a sandwich or sandwiches, that'll give them a skill where they can. Or matter of fact, let's say they might not get hired at Subway or McDonald's. That's okay. We can find a storefront and set up a business, and then that can be an economic engine for your nonprofit.
Correct.
And, you know, also teach people how to basic carpentry, and so they can go or home basic home building, so that can be an economic business for your business. And you don't have to deal with, you know, just don't have to worry about donations or all that. So I'll call you later this week on that. So before we end out for today, because we've been clear here for about 5 or so minutes, give us your info. How can they contact you again if they want to donate to help a person who's getting back on their feet? You've got 38 years of experience in doing this. The name of the business and how they can contact you or send you a Cash App today.
Well, the name of the business is Lewis Burnett Employment Finders. That's Lewis-Burnett Employment Finders. And the address here is 1723 Main Street, North Little Rock, Arkansas, 72114. But the best way, I gather, would be to give me a call. 501-413-2126. And if you just want to send a donation, you can do that by Cash App. Cash App, my Cash App is $Darlene, D-A-R-L-E-N-E, the letter L, that's a capital L, the number 67. That's Darlene L67. Make sure that L is capitalized. They can send that. We would be eternally grateful for anything, or if you have computers you want to donate, or if you have office supplies you'd like to donate, we accept that. That is something we are much need of. So, again, my telephone number is going to be the best. My telephone number is 501-413-2126. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, and we're going to wrap it up for today. Thank you, Darlene, and I'll be in touch later.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.